Welcome to Canucks Central at Noon. Your Vancouver Canucks live here.
Drops off for Horvat, back to Hitler, then to Horvat in the slot. He scores! Bo Horvat in overtime!
On the home of hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Landeskog turned it over to Horvat, right to the slot. Pedersen scores! Is there anything this kid can't do?
Here's Scott Rintoul and Mick Nizar.
It's not a game day. But there's a trade that's been made. There's others being speculated about.
Trade day.
Not that Canucks fans enjoy that sort of thing. They don't enjoy that fodder, do they, Bick? They don't enjoy talking about Tyson Barrie. They don't enjoy thinking, how could we get him here after we tried to lure him here last summer? Or is this actually the right time to go after Tyson Barrie with what they would have to give up? Things we can kick around during the course of Canucks Central. Alex Auld will join us at the bottom of this hour as well. Let's start with the deal that went down today as opposed to the hypothetical ones. Boston goes out, gets Andre Kasha, who I now have it definitively has been out of the lineup because of the flu, not because of concussion. That was earlier this year. We had different stuff coming in. It was tough to track the timeline. Bottom line is he's not playing against Vancouver tomorrow, but this is a really interesting deal. And it's a guy with term. He's got another year on his contract. He has underperformed in Anaheim, but we all know there's more there. We've seen more there, and Boston says, we'll pay you a first rounder, which is going to be late. We need you to take back his contract as well. We'll keep 25% of it, and to make it whole, we will throw in Axel Anderson, a second round pick back in 2018. Your impressions of what the Bruins did?
Yeah, we were just, you know, I was sitting there in the prep lounge with the Reach Deep boys coming up at 1. And, you know, we were just talking about, you know, Kasha versus Toffoli and which deal would you have preferred and who's the better player and all that. And I would still rather do the Toffoli deal. I get there's cost certainty and term to it, but I'd still rather do the Toffoli deal. Just because I think he's a better player. And there's a certain cost to this. Like, I think it's a good deal for both sides, and you can have wins for both sides. But I get a little worried about what we think Andre Kasha is. I know the analytics community loves him, absolutely loves him. And I do think there's more to his overall game. But, I mean, that's a pretty big cost. They give up a prospect, and yes, you get a contract off the books, that's great. But, like, first rounder and a prospect, that's pretty big.
Well, the first rounder doesn't feel like as big a deal to me because of how late it's going to be and because Boston hasn't really made its mark in the first round of the NHL draft, quite frankly. That's not how they've put their team
together.
Sure,
but that's not what we associate the value to, right?
No, but you're getting a contract off the books, and that's worth something.
Mm-hmm.
That is worth something. They're going to retain 25% of it. It certainly helps them in the here and now. We knew Boston was going to get in. I do wonder if they're going to be more active. Some around the Bruins say they're not done. Does this take them out of Chris Kreider's sweepstakes? He's certainly not as strong a player as Chris Kreider, and he's certainly a different style of player up front than Chris Kreider. I don't know if they have the currency left now to make that deal, so I wonder where else the Bruins might be looking.
Yeah, to go the high-end level of a Kreider, it feels like you're just burning more assets. And I guess you could look at it and say, hey, Bergeron's 34 years old. Maybe we are just in pedal to the metal mode and we got to try to get another one, right, before time runs out. And you want to give the core of your team that has been so loyal, and they've got the one cup, obviously, but they've come so close other times. Do you want to keep rewarding them for their efforts? And you got to keep doing that. What's funny about them is because of that poor draft, maybe they are looking at it and just saying, we just got to go for it now. We don't know if we have those pillars coming up behind them, that we got to get one more as soon as possible.
Well, and Boston is a good example of a team that has adopted this model. Look, you have to get good players.
Mm-hmm.
That is the mantra. They might have more certainty in the first round, but you just have to get good players.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of different ways to do it, and Boston has done it in a variety of ways. They've done it through the draft in later rounds. They've done it through trade. They've done it through free agency. Boston has used every tool available to it to assemble the roster it has. And now it's a team with the best record in the NHL and one that comes in here on a bit of a heater, despite the fact they may be a little fatigued tomorrow night. But as we mentioned before, and this isn't to go full game preview mode for tomorrow, their floor is so high and their consistency is among the best in the league. You can't just show up, have decent stretches, and expect to beat Boston. Nope. You better bring it.
Oh, yeah. Because
their floor is so high. Even though they're playing third and fourth nights, they're supposedly tired after flying here from Calgary, you have to play.
Similar to what happened in the last game, where, you know, by and large, the Canucks were fairly good, but there was that three different stretches of they kind of got caved in, and Minnesota capitalized in those stretches. You can't have those versus Boston. You've got to be more of a 55-minute effort, and maybe in those 5 minutes that you concede, you play at evens, and you don't get caved in, but... You know, and that's where a burden lies on Jacob Markstrom and everyone to save you in those moments. But tomorrow's effort, yeah, it's got to be much closer to a full-on compete for 60 type of game. Because there shouldn't be easy nights now. Relative to, I don't care who the competition is, you shouldn't be coasting at this stage. That was the lesson from last year with Tampa Bay. They were great, and then they coasted. And then when they needed to turn on, they couldn't turn it on. Who you play against, yes, that's important and all that, but if you control what you can control, and that's your effort, what you put forth every night, then the result should take care of itself.
Yeah, I agree with that. Mm-hmm. And we'll see what the Vancouver Canucks have in terms of their motivation and their details tomorrow night, because you need those against a team like the Boston Bruins. Scott Rentoul, Bick Nizar, Brendan Batcher tweeting out the lines at practice today, the exact same as Wednesday, which is a little bit surprising to me. Not completely. But it's a little bit surprising to me that Louis Erickson is still in the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
I wondered if Louis Erickson might be on his way out, that maybe Brandon Sutter bumped up and Zach MacEwen made his way in, but they're going to go with the Erickson train for at least one more game. Is it a shock? No.
I
wondered if this was the opportunity, though. I wondered if it was the opportunity. Hey, he could still change it by tomorrow.
Yeah, he can still change it. You know, it is the off day, and maybe tomorrow I wouldn't necessarily say that there's an indicator that a change is coming, but I guess if we're trotting this out for one more time, it's I think we know it's on its final legs, basically. We had that nice little stretch in January, and it was fun, but you know, we sat here and warned everyone. It's like, enjoy this while it is now, but understand it's going to come to a natural conclusion. And also, while we're having that conversation, like, just look at the trade that just happened. There's your framework of what a Louis Erickson jettison trade would look like.
It's going to cost you.
And now it's going to cost more because there's the extra year, right?
Oh, yeah.
So for all the people that are suggesting, oh, you could just trade Louis Erickson, are you prepared to give up a first and a high-level prospect and then some more? Yes, you get something in return, but that's what you're looking at giving up.
And getting,
to me, that's not very encouraging.
Getting Louis Erickson off the Canucks books this summer, to me, the higher likelihood is it's something along the Kovalchuk lines or something along the Bogosian lines.
Right. I mean, I've been saying this going back to November. I feel like a natural resolution will happen. I don't know what that might look like, but if you're anticipating them moving Louis Erickson off the books somehow proactively by a trade or something like that, I just don't see it happening.
I'm same with you.
Yeah, and so I think either this summer, maybe it's next summer. I just think a organic, natural way is the way it happens. That, to me, is the easiest way for all parties to exit here.
Leaf hater Steve, I'm just happy we're actually talking about what else we could do instead of what we are trying to get rid of. Let's send him to Utica. We all know he will bolt.
That's what I'm talking about, though.
Like, I thought that was going to happen last summer or early this season. Mm-hmm. That's what I thought was going to happen.
But he beat people out, right? Like, he beat players out to stay in the lineup.
And I think that's what they wanted to happen. I think they wanted Sven Berchi to be better. I think they signed Nikolai Goldobin saying, look, give him one more shot. He can be better than that. And ultimately we say, sorry, they're younger, they're better, you don't fit. But you're right. He beat them out in training camp.
Yeah, he beat them out. And that's not necessarily a ringing endorsement for Louis Erickson. That's an indictment on the players that didn't beat him. So that's why this reality continues. And now that you look at what's moving forward, okay, that's another year for Cole Lind. Like, there's an expectation Colden tries to get a spot next year. I think that's a reasonable expectation, right? Zach MacEwen, already up, and you heard Jim Benning talk about, yeah, he seems like he's going to be a full-time player next year. Hoglander, all those guys, they're coming. So next year, it's going to be a lot tougher for Louis Erickson to make the lineup. So that's why, you know, when we talk about things like natural resolution, that's what we're talking about. If you want to make it tough for Louis Erickson, that world may exist in the offseason.
Like many of our listeners already have, get in on the conversation. Subway text line is 650-650. Tyson Berry's name has been out there for the last day or so, thanks to your show, the program. Elliot Friedman did the bonus hit, came on yesterday and decided, let's throw a little something out there. He was asked about Troy Stetcher here in Vancouver as it might relate to a deal with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Here's what he had to say.
Well, I think the Stetcher thing is definitely true. Like, you guys went through a situation last year with Ben Hutton where Vancouver was uncomfortable with the with what it would take to qualify him, and so they lost him. And I think that they are a little bit concerned about that with Stetcher. And I do think that that is a factor. I do think that Stetcher is available. Look, on Barry, I think that, you know, what Toronto's been doing over the last couple of months or the last couple of weeks is saying, okay, there's a lot of different directions we can go. We can, like, I don't think they're packing it in by any stretch of the imagination, but I think they have looked at the value of some of their UFADs. Now, they're about to sign Jake Muzzin. It may not happen until March 1st when you can go 10% over the cap for next year, but they're going to extend them. That's a deal that's verbally agreed to. But they're not going to extend Barry. It just hasn't worked. And I think they've been asked a lot about Barry this year, periodically. You know, just before Babcock was fired, there was a meeting between Barry's representatives and the Leafs, and they made it clear that it wasn't working, and if it didn't change, that maybe there would be a trade might be the best option. They made the coaching change. Things got better for a little bit. But now I think Toronto's at least looking at the possibility of it. It wouldn't surprise me if Calgary was in that too. You guys know that your organization's had a lot of interest in Barry. So I think it's possible. But Toronto's not going to do it to the point where they make themselves worse. So I think you guys have also potentially looked at a guy like Severson in New Jersey. I don't think that he's necessarily going anywhere at this point in time. But I do think you guys are looking around to change your mix.
So here's one question, and I'll follow it up with the other because he threw Calgary in the mix. One, is this the manner in which the Canucks should be looking to change their blue line right now? Just hypothetically. Let's say it's Stetcher out and it's Barry in. Forget about the pieces it would take around that to make it happen. It's almost a straight salary switch for what Toronto has on the books cap hit-wise. It does change the style of the blue line because it completely changes the identity of one of the pairings. Is that the move the Canucks should be looking at right now?
Well, this is the conversation we've tried to have. And there's two parts to this, right? I first want to break down just the Troy Stetcher part, and then we'll talk about the Stetcher-Barry comparison. When we've talked about if you want to make moves and hockey trades, the names we've brought up are Troy Stetcher, Jake Virtanen. Like, those are your hockey trades that you can make what's on the roster right now. And these are the types of 3D moves that you can try to move, and you're basically moving deck chairs, but you can reorganize the way it looks, and Troy Stetcher goes out for a forward and Jake Virtanen goes out for a D-man, and you can reshuffle your D on the fly here. And I don't have a big issue with that because it is non-core pieces. As much as we all like Troy Stetcher and look like nobody's rooting against him, it's just the reality of the world, right? He's not part of the core. Now, when you compare it directly to Tyson Barry, one of the things that this team needs is better puck movers. And Troy Stetcher is a okay puck mover. Tyson Barry is a very good puck mover. In that scenario, where I get nervous now is we've seen what Tyson Barry has done defensively. And that's where Troy Stetcher probably has an edge over Tyson Barry. And
that's what this team collectively needs to work on the most. Not just with its blue line, with team defense.
Yes.
Not just with its blue line. I don't want to say that, hey, the blue line is awful defensively and that's why the Canucks give up high danger chances. No, no. It's a five-man commitment that they need to be better at overall.
And so what I do say is I don't know if one change has a big impact on the overall defensive improvement. However, is if you can move the puck better, does that collectively ease the burden on everyone? And so that's an interesting idea when you specifically consider Barry for Stetcher and, you know, whatever the pieces go around, but the main parts of that deal would be those guys. That's interesting because if they can play faster and move the puck better in all those steps, maybe you just spend less time defending. And it's not as if Jordy Benn doesn't have defensive capabilities, right? That's in his game. And when you look at that pairing at times...
Or I think, Oscar Fantenberg, for
or,
that
matter. Or Oscar Fantenberg. But I think when we look at it, I think Tyler Myers should be playing higher up in the lineup. I think what motivates some of this is he and Edler should probably... I think they're viewed as a pairing. We saw it to begin the year. If that's what you want your shutdown pairing to be, that looks like it could be a decent shutdown pairing. And then... can you now get a puck mover on the third line? And Jordy Benn is kind of the defensive stay-at-home guy.
I'm not convinced that Myers-Edler looks like a pretty good shutdown pairing. I would disagree with you on that.
Again, as a second, because they're the second pairing, right? I feel like, is matchup a better term? Because I think the shutdown pairing is whatever line Hughes and Tanev is.
Mm-hmm.
That's the true shutdown because they're going to dominate the puck, and you put them out against other good players, they'll dominate. But is the Myers-Edler one views as the matchup pairing. That's a better term.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. Yeah, I just don't like the thought of that being the shutdown pairing.
Poor choice of words on my part.
Okay.
But I do think from the lens of the coaching staff, I think they view that as the defensive pairing. Whereas Hughes is obviously your offensive creator, and they play defense by being very on the front foot and attacking.
In the hypothetical world that Barry was here and Stetcher was not, my guess is the coaching staff would look at Edler Barry and Myers Fantenberg. That's my guess.
Just because of the mobility aspect or the defensive play aspect?
Yep, I think so. Now, I understand what the perception of having Tyler Myers and his contract on your third pairing, which has kind of been the case lately. I understand all of that. I just wonder if that's how they'd look at it.
The other interesting conversation then with Tyson Barry is, does Myers stay on your second power play unit? Right? Or do you just play with 2D-man? Because that second unit is kind of lacking for one more piece. Maybe you just put 2D-man there and you can get an injection of offense that way. And that also opens up, hey, if Bo Horvat goes that on that unit, that unit's talent floor gets higher.
I understand why the hypothetical exists. I understand why there's a link between the two organizations. My gut tells me this doesn't happen now. If Tyson Barry is a Vancouver Canuck, my gut tells me it's next season and that they're altering a couple of pieces on that back end, that maybe Stetcher is traded and Chris Tanev is no longer Vancouver Canuck. Could be wrong. That's my guess.
That's fair. Yeah.
I feel like if a deal was to get done between the two, with the three parties involved that Elliot threw out there in that clip, I kind of feel like Tyson Barry's a better fit right now in Calgary. Not only because they have a couple of injuries, but also because they need goals.
The bigger need is for Calgary,
yes,
for sure.
Yes, it is.
They need D-man and fast.
Well, and they need a different style of D-man.
Mm-hmm.
Tyson Barry represents something they don't really have on the back end right now. I know he plays the other side, and everybody loves offense. The Canucks have a guy like that in Quinn Hughes. Like, they have a driver of offense who happens to play defense better than Tyson Barry currently plays defense as well in Quinn Hughes. Calgary doesn't have that guy.
I guess.
Could Calgary move out a defenseman for Tyson Barry? I think they are better equipped to do something like that. I don't know if Toronto's interested in what Calgary would have to offer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they like TJ Brody.
That's the other thing. Where's TJ Brody standing in relation to Troy Stetcher, right? And how valuable are those two players from the eyes of the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Sure. I think the better fit, if there was a trade to be consummated in the next 3 days, I think it's in Calgary right now. We'll wait and see if anything shakes out on that front.
But just the Stetcher name in general, and you heard it off the top there, just when it comes with that clip, it's, you know, there's a contractual obligation to this. And so you have to think of, if an acquiring team is taking on Troy Stetcher, they're also doing it to pay him as well. So you have to think of what that value is. I think it's somewhere around, you know, depending, I guess, the team. If it's a seller that takes him on, because I do think people would want to acquire him, even if they are a seller. But that price is probably lower than an immediate playoff team. And a team that's in the playoffs probably the value of Troy Stetcher will be higher to them because of they have an immediate need to want to win now.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I also wonder if a deal does get consummated that involves Troy Stetcher, if it actually makes a lot more sense for that to happen closer to the draft. And that's one of the ways they try to recoup picks.
Yeah. Again, all the worry that they're giving up picks, they have options to get picks back. It's a matter of, do you want to explore those options? Jake Virtanen could net you a pick back. Troy Stetcher could net you a big pick back. Brandon Sutter could get you a pick back. It's just, do you want to go down certain avenues to start doing that? And fans have attached themselves to certain players, and I appreciate that, but you can't want all the things. You have to prioritize where you land. Is winning your priority? Is it winning with these guys your priority? How do you want to go about it?
A deal that is purported to be going down. Sources out there saying the Islanders have traded Ilya Sorokin's rights to Chicago. Goaltender has never played for the Islanders, been playing over in the KHL. Mm-hmm. An interesting deal, though it doesn't affect the NHL roster now, but it might give you an indication as to what Chicago plans to do with that position.
Well, I can't imagine they're betting it all on him for next year, right? You probably still want one of those guys, and you bring along Sorokin at a pace, right? Or do they go into the market and say, hey, we can just get a short-term, we've heard the names, Hudobin, whatever the guy.
Halak, Grice.
Do you just get a short-term guy and Sorokin will be 25 by the time, or 26, I think, by the time that deal is up? Now you've got your long-term solution. Well, I think it presents more options for Chicago.
Chicago's paying a lot of money for their goaltending position right now, in this one year.
Yes.
And could I see them getting off that and going extremely frugal relative to what they're doing right now so that they can free up cap room in other places? Because this hasn't worked.
Mm-hmm.
This hasn't worked trying to bring in a whole bunch of different guys with some of the big contracts they have to legacy projects, some of which are still productive, some of which are not. Mm-hmm. That hasn't worked so far. So they're one of those teams. Minnesota's a team like Chicago, at least cap constraint-wise, I should say, where, okay, how do we figure this out? There are some contracts we're going to be tied to. Nobody's going to take off our hands. So how do we move around some other things to free up money and try to re-inject this lineup with youth?
Yeah, because they're starting to, some of their big ticket items are going to come to the payroll now. Like DeBrincat 6.4, that starts next year. Dylan Strome's going to need a raise really soon. This summer. Dominic Kubalik is needing a raise this summer. So they, you know, what's interesting about that is, yeah, you start cheaping out on your goaltending. And do you get a baseline, which I think there's a certain wave of thinking that it's lending that way. How far do they go into it? Because if they spend, say, $3 million in net, that saves them a ton of money. That's $8 million that they save.
Like what Columbus is doing this year. Columbus is spending no money on its goaltending, which has been excellent. I feel bad for that team. I really do.
It just gets worse. Bjorkstrand right now, what is it, 8 to 10?
Yes.
Brutal.
On the heels of Seth Jones being gone 8 to 10, Atkinson's out. Josh Anderson, they don't know if he's going to be healthy enough to even trade him if that's what they're planning to do to get different assets in there. That team has put up such a good fight, and Torts has done such a good job with that team this year, but it looks like luck's going to catch up to them. And maybe that makes things easier for Kekalainen here in the next 3 days to go, okay, we have been game, man, and I'm really proud of our organization, but sometimes it's just not your year, so let's see if we can bring in a couple more assets moving forward for guys that have interest from other teams on our roster.
Yeah, I'm not sure how you play that out. I think I might be of the mind that you just let it run.
Maybe, but like a Josh Anderson, for example, and his name has come up in the
last
couple of days, and people say, yes, and people have said, why? Why would you get rid of him?
Yeah.
Well, because somebody's going to pay you a price.
Right, but he's part of the to me, like, that's a solution player. That's a player that has a very specific role. He understands what that role is. He's lived up to his identity. And I'm not saying you need that in the playoffs, but that's something that they valued.
Of course. But Blake Coleman is a solution player. Mm-hmm. If the price is right, you have to be open-minded enough to say, we can get something big for this now, and it benefits us going forward.
But they've proven they can be competitive next year. Like, is New Jersey ready to be competitive? Like, playoff competitive next year? The Coleman one I get, but Josh Anderson's 25 years old. This is a team that expects to be in the playoffs next year.
It's also a team that's going to have to pay him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's on the verge of another contract. And I know he's an RFA, but he's going to have a really interesting case, isn't he? Based on his stretch drive in playoffs last year, factor in the injury this season, that's going to be a really interesting case. Could it get contentious? It's possible.
Yeah, because they had a tough one already, right? Yeah, that's true.
And there are some people that felt, and I heard Elliot talking about this, that when he signed that deal and it was determined pretty early that Columbus got a sweetheart of a deal, that Josh Anderson was pretty convinced the next time it came around, it's time to get paid fairly.
That's the reality players live in, right? And
yep.
And it exists here, too, when you talk about
Kevin LeBanc, line one.
Yeah, exactly. But if you look here, like how many players have their contracts coming to a close? There's how you balance winning, your overall team's culture, player happiness, and player compensation. It's a tricky balance, and deadlines spur action. Not that I think we're going to see a lot of contractual news for the Canucks here in the short term. It's just you ponder those things when deadlines approach.
Action, it's his middle name, Alex Auld, the AAA, joins us next right here on the home of Canucks hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Now more of Canucks Central on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Well, I'm still here, so I'm definitely like excited. Nothing's happened. I'm still here. I'm still practicing. I practiced 30 today, and you know, I'm gonna get ready for the game tomorrow. Whatever happens, happens. But like you said, there has been some dark times. We haven't won a lot of games, so this year it's, I don't know, it's re-energized kind of the group as a whole, and we've been excited to come to the rink. We love each other as teammates and as friends, and I think it's reflecting to our on ice play. And I'd love to be here for the playoff run, but I can't control that.
It's unsettling for a lot of players. I would think more so for a guy who's from here.
For sure.
And for a guy who is really tied in as far as relationships go in that dressing room, Troy Stetcher. We can talk about his play and what his ceiling is and where he factors into the Canucks' plans going forward. We know this for a fact. You've talked to enough players. I've talked to enough players. We've talked to enough people around the team. They love him in that dressing room.
Yeah, and the city loves him, and to be honest, most in the media do, because he's very receptive to questions, and he'll give you a good quote. And
heart and soul guy.
Yeah, nobody has anything bad to say when it comes to Troy Stetcher. It just, a reality exists. That's all. And it's going to suck the wind out of a lot of people if that comes to fruition, where he is moved prior to Monday. Fans I would expect to see some devastation because a lot of people are attached to him, and it rightfully so. But again, it you have to, and fans don't necessarily do this, but you have to like prioritize how you filter everything. Is winning the most important thing to you, or is it more about, hey, I want to root for the certain group of guys? What's more important to you? And it sucks that you get put in these positions because of trades and transactions, but a reality exists.
You know what doesn't suck? Having Alex Auld join us at this time every single Friday. What's up, buddy? How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys doing?
We are doing well. Are there specific trade deadlines during the course of your career where you can remember sweating it a little more than others?
Yeah, the one time I was moved. Saw the writing on the wall. So this was in 2010. I was with Dallas, and sort of before, that was an Olympic year, obviously, as we all know here in Vancouver. And it was an interesting situation. I was with the Dallas Stars. Marty Turco is a pending UFA. I had been picked up in the offseason prior to that year. And kind of the hope was that I would go in there, and at least I was hoping I'd go in and play well enough and sort of take over in the net and allow Marty Turco to walk. And my play was okay, not strong enough. And my former teammate, the GM at the time, Joe Nieuwendyk, he made the deal to actually pick up Kari Lehtinen from Atlanta, and that signaled that was the future and that was the way they were going to go. And I remember going into the Olympic break not really knowing, and Joe Nieuwendyk calling me aside and say, look, go away, enjoy your time. We aren't sure what we're going to do. Maybe we can move Turco, but we don't know if that contract's going to be able to be movable. Maybe we work something out and move you. And so that was a tough Olympic break for sure. And then it led right into the trade deadline. And basically we came back from Cabo, still enjoyed ourselves, obviously, boys. But we sat by the phone and waited. And it was a strange transaction. I wasn't actually traded. It was one of the rare pickups on re-entry waivers is what was part of it at the time. So I was half price for the New York Rangers, and I got picked up by them for their stretch drive and hopefully playoff run. We ended up losing out on the last day of the regular season in a shootout. I don't know if you recall that, to Philly, and they went all the way to the final. But the point is that you're worried. You feel something's coming, but at least something worked out for me, because it could have been that I would have just actually sat in the minors. The plan was to send me down if no one would pick me up, and I'd hang out in Austin, Texas with the Texas Stars. So at least it worked out, and I got to be in the NHL and play a couple more years up in the National Hockey League. But when you know, I think it wears on you. There's other times for sure you're wondering, are we going to add to the group? Are we going to subtract to the group? If we get better, I hope I'm still here. I hope I'm part of the solution, not part of the problem. There's so much going through your mind as a player at this time of year.
Was it an easier sell on the home front because you're going to NYC?
Well, it was interesting because at the time, our son Sam was probably a year and a half, and we felt quite settled in Dallas, even though it had only been 4 or 5 months in town there. But my wife had sort of just set up a routine and a regular schedule, and with a young, young toddler, that's pretty important. So they did come to visit, but again, it was me going to New York City for 2 months and staying in an extended stay hotel apartment. So I went on my own and they came to visit, but it was, I think long-term New York would have been great. We would have found a way to make it work, but that also a story of my career, boys. I never played anywhere more than 1 year in a row. And so I got a little taste of the Big Apple, and I just said, you know what? That's not for me.
You know, what's fascinating too is it feels so easy for us and fans like to talk about, trade this guy and trade this guy. But inside the room, right, like there's a real-world element to this. How do players, kind of take these days in stride? Do you just say, hey, okay, cool, I play for New Jersey? Or is it, are you very contemplative about what can happen these next few days?
You know, it's interesting. I was driving the kids to school this morning and listening to the starting lineup and listening to Perry and Seaball talk about it. And then they'd have audio of Adam Gaudette talking about being in the rumors. And I'm like, I can just see, and I think back to my career, and a little different now. Guys are a little bit more in tune because of social media. Media, for whatever reason, think it's a good idea to tag these players in rumors.
Like, oh, it's the worst.
It's a kick in the teeth. But here it is. I'm hearing Adam Gaudette, and I'm like, I can just picture this scrum in the morning. Comes off the ice after practice. Everyone walks up and they're like, hey, so what do you think about being in a trade rumor? And you're like, what? And you got to play it cool. And you're like, okay, what did some veteran say about this once? All right, oh, I'm just one day at a time. It's not bothering me, all that type of BS. At the end of the day, it rattles you. I think it bothers you. We're all human. And I think that's the one thing I ask the fans to remember and media as well, is that these are human beings, right? There's a human element to it. Imagine going to work every day, no matter what industry you're in, and imagine that at some point you're just going to get transferred to another location, another office in another city, having to uproot your family, and it's at a moment's notice. And guess what? Like, you got to be on the plane in 2 hours and you're playing tomorrow night or whatever it is. Like, it is a very difficult time, and it's stressful. And the first time you go through that as a young player in terms of being in the rumors and all those sorts of things, it can wear on you. Yeah, there's a certain level of professionalism, and these guys are very well compensated, but that doesn't mean they're not going to have human emotions, and that doesn't mean they're not, that they aren't allowed to feel what's going on and how it affects their family.
Yeah, and I think that part's a really good one, Aldi, is that the family element, not that it's completely easy if you're single, but it is easier, and I understand the fan mentality of, hey, look, you play this game to win a cup, and if you got a better shot at doing that, that's why you're there. But I don't think people realize that isn't the only priority people have in their lives.
Well, you're exactly right, Scotty. And so one thing that I see has happened, and in a way, the analytics and all this concrete data and information has in some ways removed a little bit of the human element, because you look at it and you're it's more factual. It's like, this is, you know, it's X and Y on a chart, and you're looking at it, and you're like, all right, that we can plug that in, and this is how it's going to work. So on one hand, you've removed a bit of that human element, although across all of society, and especially in professional sports, I believe there is far more understanding of the importance of taking care of the human side of the athlete. This isn't just the hockey player, it's a person. And you have to make sure you're aware of that. And you see organizations, they really take into account more of the, whether it's mental skills training, but also the mental health aspect, and understanding that there's more about it than just these cold, calculated decisions. But you're right, it's for some guys, especially if you're, everyone's different, everyone's unique, different family situation, point in your career, whether you've won or not, how important stability is to you as opposed to chasing cups. And at some point, is it the right decision to just stay where you're at and be there for your family or whatever it may be? There are so many aspects around being a player and being a person, quite frankly. And this is all a part of it. But I get the fans' point of view that you want to make your team as good as possible. Or if you're out of it, you want to find a way to bring in future assets and all those things. But just don't lose sight of that human element.
Well, there's the one faction of the fan base that, yeah, is exactly what you're talking about. But, you know, generally speaking, the majority is the I've got an attachment to certain players. And, you know, I think maybe someone that's got the most attachment is Troy Stetcher, because of the local ties. And his name's obviously been brought up a ton. But, you know, I want to take you outside the locker room for a second, outside of a player's perspective. Like, does a move like that make sense to you to some degree?
It does and it doesn't. I think what you end up with is, you know, you look at a team that's poised to make the playoffs and potentially go on a run. And it's part of it is the way they've played and the fact that they're getting great goaltending. You're like, okay, it's conceivable that if this team gets hot, if Jacob Markstrom plays well, they can win a round or two. And once you win a round, really, what's stopping you? And so from that point of view, I look at it, I'm like, well, why would you be moving a player that is the type of player maybe you would bring in at the deadline, you know, a rental type of guy? And this is that balance you always walk as an organization, because then on the flip side, you also don't want to lose assets for nothing. You know, they went down last year with Ben Hutton and end up moving on from him for, you know, for a lot of reasons. It wasn't just that they couldn't get a deal done, but part of it is, okay, what this guy's going to command on the market, what he wants in terms of his contract demands, they don't align with where we're going to play him. So it's okay to walk away. But if you do that too many times year over year, then you end up just losing these assets. And cap space is important for sure, but can you recoup something? There's that constant balance of the future and the present, and really good management teams can walk that line and really understand the points of pressure and when to move on from a guy, what the value in return is, as opposed to locking someone up long-term. And I do think that the Canucks are on their blue line, looking at the fact that there are, you know, just from inflation, just from contract negotiations, certain guys are going to be priced out, and you may have to make decisions anyway to move on from players. So is the value of what this player brings you today worth keeping, or is it worth the asset back in return? And so I do think it's worth exploring at the very least and putting out there and seeing what the return may be. I feel for a guy like Troy Stetcher, though. I mean, what a dream come true to play in your hometown and to be a guy who really has done whatever's asked of him. You think about his varied role in his few seasons with the Canucks, from being a guy who's playing a ton on the power play to being more of a defensive guy, up and down the lineup depending on injuries, and faring quite well, sometimes punching above his weight. And he's a guy who just has proven he wants to just do it for this team. And at the same time, you are a commodity. And if the organization feels that it's best to move on and bring something back, I can understand that. But I really hope that if they do move on from Stetcher, that he finds a good landing spot for himself. It's a place where he has a chance to possibly win, or more importantly, really solidify his spot in a roster going forward.
Alex Aull joins us every single Friday here on Canucks Central. He does so now. Let's talk about this team moving forward as currently constructed. They're trying to figure out, do we need to upgrade? Do we have enough to get into the playoffs as is, and then maybe get the injection of Besser and or Levo back into our lineup as we head into the postseason? What is your biggest question about the Vancouver Canucks heading into the stretch?
Well, without Besser and Levo, I look at it, it's consistency. I think that is... you know, what team are you going to get on a night-to-night basis? I do love the way this or this group has been able to respond throughout the course of the season. There's been a couple times where we've looked at it and said, this is a tipping point. In the last couple of years, this is where they've fallen off the rails, or this similar type of situation is where the season has gotten away from them, and they found a way to recoup and really get back on track and then and play even better. So I've liked that about the group, but at the same time, the need for those responses is because of some dips in their play and some downturns in what they've been doing. So how consistent are they going to be? And then the question goes without, again, Besser and Levo being out, how long are they out? What's the depth like, in the depth of offense? That's why I do like bringing in Toffoli. I love their forward lineup if they're all healthy. When you look at the addition of Tyler Toffoli, he's a guy who can play in your top couple of lines based more on personnel and chemistry and fit, rather than, oh, this guy's a first-line guy, that guy's a second-line guy. And then there's the potential, if Besser is healthy especially, that you can have, really, that would bring up the offense on Horvat's line as well. Whether it's Toffoli or Besser, you could see a real punch happening there and some more offensive play. So to me, it's the consistency and the health. And as we've seen in years past with every team going into the playoffs, you can survive at a certain threshold of injuries. And I think they're at a point, especially with the addition of Toffoli, where they're going to be okay. But if there's any more injuries, if the injuries start to creep up on the back end, what's that going to look like? Because the team is getting the goaltending. They're getting some great performances from some key offensive contributors, namely Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson. And those guys are really driving the bus on offense. And of course, JT Miller. But beyond that, the injuries, if Hughes goes down, they're done. But the back end in general has been relatively healthy this year, especially at the top. And is that something that's going to continue going forward?
Scott and I were just discussing, you know, a couple of trade rumors, but it shifted to a conversation of, okay, if you had to correct one thing kind of about this team, and I do like the way this team tries to defend, but I feel like they get into a trouble spot of trying to move the puck and it invites more defensive pressure. If you had to try to correct one thing or the one thing that stands out, what would you focus on?
Well, you're right in terms of defending. I'd love to see. I don't have the solution in the way they should play. Like
right.
It's hard for me to know if this is systematic or it's personnel and some young players in key positions growing and learning. But I'd like to see them a little bit better in their defensive zone coverage. And one thing that I do know is that it takes time for even very good young centermen to really fully grasp the defensive side of the game. I see Elias Pettersson, and I love the way he tries on defense. I think he has the ability to become a very high-end defensive centerman, especially considering his offensive skill set. So I guess I'd classify it as a really high-end two-way guy, a guy you aren't afraid of in matchups. And they're getting to that point, but he's still not the guy you want out there and say, all right, let's shut this down with this guy. So will he continue to improve? We would say yes, because of the fact that he loves to learn and he's hungry to get better. But there's still some youthful mistakes or youthful reads and just the lack of speed in terms of this is what I need to do right now. It's not quite instinctful. I would put Horvat a bit in that same situation. The D, it's just those bottom three players. And what I mean by that, the defense and the center and low coverage, are they all in sync all the time? No, I don't know that that's the best. And so, again, is it systematic or is it personnel? If it's personnel, is it youthful growing pains? And those are things that really only the coaching staff is going to be able to analyze, because they understand the message. They understand what's getting picked up and what's not getting grasped in the moment. But their ability to defend and not rely so heavily on Jacob Markstrom being heroic in order to get wins, that's something to me. Like, I believe a goalie can steal you playoff rounds, absolutely. But is it sustainable to rely on it every single night? That probably isn't the case. So defending in general is an area where I would like to see them clean it up.
Correct me if I'm wrong and take this whatever direction you want, but I'm guessing the Quinn Hughes assist to Jay Beagle qualifies for play of the week for Alex Hall?
Yes, absolutely. I thought Beagle's finish was extraordinary. No, I like to see Jay Beagle score that goal, obviously. But a couple things about that Quinn Hughes assist. I mean, I love the way Mott, you know, sacrifices the body and takes the hit to make the play, kind of old school that way. And that's all effort from Tyler Mott, getting that puck out. But what's really interesting to me, and I remember watching it on TV, and John Garrett said it at the time, is like, I felt like he waited too long. Like, he was out of space. And I remember thinking that too. I'm like, what's he doing? Move the puck. And Quinn Hughes, like, took his toes away from the net. Like, he angled his skates. And actually, that little hesitation stuck the defender in even more and bought him time, even though it's counterintuitive and it takes you away from where you want to get to. And then just the way he threaded that puck through there, pretty sneaky, ultra elite. This guy just continues to impress. And what a setup, what a pass. And it's just, and Jay Beagle just able to tap that one in. And then Quinn Hughes, again, like I said, he just continues to, we're not even talking about rookie wall right now. We're talking about this guy getting better. And that is exceptional. I know we were on the floor when they drafted Quinn Hughes in Dallas, and Scotty, we got to talk to him and his family, and it was, you know, it was all about this hope for the future and hope for this, you know, smooth skating defenseman. We were excited. The Canucks were excited. I don't know if anyone expected this. This is incredible what he's been able to do.
Yeah, it certainly is. The Blanchard Six will never forget. Aldi, maybe it started on that trip. How many times, how often have you thought about fighting Andrew Walker?
Why do you bring that up?
Well, I thought I saw a preview last night with Gerby taking on Sanheim.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, you know, I don't know. It's I get it. Yeah, that would be an interesting thing to witness, I think, that bout. But you know what? He's got he's like a little pit bull. Go for the ankles and chew on your pant leg or something. But it's all in good fun with walks.
I wanted to end on a light note. Thanks, Aldi. Have a great weekend.
All right, boys. You too. Enjoy it. Enjoy the sun, everyone.
We will. That is Alex Ald on a Friday. You saw that last night. It was incredible.
Well, I saw the fight. I had no idea where you were going with that.
Gerby, hero to the sub-6 community last night, wasn't he?
Oh, my goodness.
What a hero.
You know when you send, like, LOL to someone, you're not actually laughing out loud? That was me doing that. I honestly, laughing out loud, almost fell on the floor laughing. That was great.
I'm glad you could enjoy it because you got the round table booked. You guys should have a great Canucks round table, pre-deadline edition.
It's going to be Rumor Central. We'll unpack and, you know, provide some news. Patrick Johnson and Irfan Ghaffar joining Andrew Walker and Sat Shah.
Must listen. Should be fantastic
it's
stuff.
It's going to be a blast, 5 to 7.
I will be back here for the trade deadline on Monday. And, yeah, Canucks Central, we're going to be getting into it as well. Sat's going to join us. We'll have the three-man panel on Monday for Canucks Central.
You'll hear Kessler, BX, Boudreaux, all the guys, Friedman, who are on TV as well.
We have Joey Kenward down at the rink, Batch, Murph, the like on the road. Hershey is going to be there as well because the Canucks will be in Montreal. We will have you covered. Anything that goes down with the Vancouver Canucks or anything in and around them, you're going to hear it here first on your home of Canucks hockey. Dominic Sarmati, Randeep Janda, they comprise Reach Deep today. That's up next. Have a great weekend, everybody.